and welcome to the Negative Positives Podcast, episode 425. I'm your host, Mike Gutterman, coming to you from the Gutterman Cave here in getting a little more fall-like Louisville, Kentucky. Still nice weather, still able to wear the flip-flops, still able to air out the toes, and so not getting too depressed yet. I hate the cold weather, but there's a little bit of fall in the air around here, and I don't know if I like it, but we're gonna have to roll with it. There's nothing I can do about it. But we got a guest tonight. It's been a while since we had a guest, and it's a good one. And all I can say is, yeah, man. And so that's a little preview of who we got coming up here. But first, let's get to our co-captains all the way out in Los Angeles, the City of Angels, La La Land. Mr. Andre Dominguez, how you doing tonight, Andre?
I'm doing well, Mike. I'm nursing here a Stella 0.0% alcohol. There might be, as another little kind of teaser here, there might be some talk of a recent trip to Vegas and some hangovers. So keeping it light and easy with some non-alcoholic beer.
At that point, just drink, a soda or some tea or water or something. Like, what's the point? You're just, I don't understand it. But
less calories than a soda.
Yeah, you're right.
More calories than a sparkling water, though.
Yeah. All right. Well, and let's get on out to the other co-captain, Mr. Kooks, the drunk dark room. I guess you're in the Golden State, right? You're out in Cali right now?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, where do you usually stay when you're in California?
The lovely town of Rancho Cucamonga.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Which Yeah. Oh, sorry.
I have no idea where that is because I've never been out to California, but it sounds fine.
You must have never seen Friday or Next Friday either, huh?
Oh, I have. I have seen that. Yeah. Yes.
You remember when he was trying to get out to Rancho Cucamonga?
Oh, that's right. Okay. I knew it sounded familiar from something.
A little funny aside is that when I first moved out here 20 years ago and I was working for a different company, I got my license changed to where I worked. And going through TSA, some of the people at TSA would look at my license and they go, Rancho Cucamonga is a real place? Man, it's a real place. It's like they had never heard of it except for seeing it in the movie. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Nice. And so let's get to our guest, Mr. Ted Vieira of Photography Matters podcast fame. You know him from YouTube. You love him. And the best pipes in all of the podcasting. Probably some of the best pipes in the world. This guy has the sultry tones of a jazz angel. And I don't know what kind of introduction that is, Ted, if you've ever had that before, but Mr. Ted Vieira, all the way out in Las Vegas, I might say the home of the most recent Stanley Cup winner, the Las Vegas Golden Knights. I was actually cheering against you guys, but you won anyway. So, okay. How you doing, Ted?
Man, great. It is so good to be back on the show and just to be able to sit here and chat with you guys again. I'm really looking forward to this.
Nice. Well, we talked a little bit in the pre-show that you're kind of our guinea pig tonight because we haven't had a guest in a while. And one thing we used to do is get questions to the guest from our Facebook group and let the Facebook group do all the work so we wouldn't have to do any work. It's kind of the way we did it. And now we're trying a different format with guests. We got like Kooks came up with five really deep introspective questions about the about your process and all that stuff. So we're gonna give this a shot, and I think we're gonna ask these same questions to all our guests and get because these questions are so well crafted by Kooks, I think they'll bring up good conversations here. So hopefully, Kooks, you've got those questions in front of you because I don't.
I do.
Nice. Well, before we get to those, we'll do those in the second segment. But Ted, what's been up, man? It's like I've got you in my podcast catcher feed. And then, you took a little break from the podcast, the Photography Matters podcast. And then next thing I know, it pops back up and I'm happy. And, there he is. There's the voice. And, and then next thing I know, it kind of goes back away a little bit and I haven't heard from you in a bit, but I understand, I'm a guy that does a podcast and never shoots photography. So, maybe if we can get you, to start podcasting and me to start shooting, the whole world will become a better place.
I'll make a deal with you. We'll do that. This will be a team effort.
Right. I like it. So, Ted, tell us a little catch up. It's been a while since we've had you on here. This is Ted's third time. I told him in the pre-recording he only has two more times before he gets illustrious.
Yeah,
illustrious negative positive smoker's jacket, and the smoker's robe, and all right, Ted, I'll stop talking. What have you been up to, man?
I love the podcast. Doing the podcast, I love putting out the videos. I've been trying to, keep it both of those. And I do it. I love the conversations. I love the feedback and the interaction that happens on both those platforms. I love it, man. I've got some really cool people who chime in, and it's great conversation about photography and content and things like that. But I'll get to a phase where, man, I just don't know what to say, and I don't want to waste anybody's time. That's like the main thing, is I just don't want to show up just to be there.
I'm starting to feel guilty just by you saying that.
You're such an entertaining cat, man. It's good to show up every time.
I appreciate that. If there's anybody on this planet that has wasted a lot of people's time with podcast episodes, it's probably me.
Like I said, you're an entertainer, man. You brighten people's days. So.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. But
we definitely can't be called educational. So we'll so settle for mildly entertaining.
So, I do want to get back on the podcast source again and do put out more videos. I've been having a lot of fun. And some of the stuff that we talked about right before the show is that one of my funnest things about the podcast and the videos now is I have gone back to playing guitar again.
Yeah.
Like we were saying, like that meant for 30 plus years. That's how I paid the light bills. I'm a guitar player first. I started playing professionally when I was 17. I finally retired from full-time music in 2008. And at that time, I was starting my content creation and photography and web development business. And, man, I knew that, like I was saying before, if I picked up a guitar, man, it'd be 4, 6, 8 hours before I would set the thing back down again. And I knew I couldn't do that, right? I had to focus on these new businesses, get them up and running. It was 2008, man. That's when things just went right over the cliff, right?
Right.
So I kind of, man, I just pushed guitar out of my mind, pushed music. I didn't even listen to music. I didn't listen to any jazz, any funk, anything, man. And just within about the last year or so, I kind of reminded myself that, dude, you're a guitar player first before anything else ever happened in your life. Mm-hmm. You're a guitar player. And it's like when you deprive yourself of something so strong like that, boy, it can take its toll, And then when I started picking up a guitar again and started playing, started recording and writing new stuff, and then I started putting it on the backgrounds for my videos and for
my stuff,
I was having so much fun. And you know what, man? It was like a time machine. It took me back to all those years on the road, all those years on stage, on the shows and things like that. It really did, man. It gave me that kind of vibe. So that's why I've loved putting out the podcast episodes. That's part of the reason I love doing any kind of shows anymore, is because it gives me an excuse to have to write and record something.
Ah, nice. Well, I mean, that's the only reason I still do this podcast, is to push my music on people in the background. So that's
man. You know exactly what I'm talking about. You're a guitar player, man.
No, I pretend to be one at times, it's interesting how, music, photography, whatever your passions might be. Like, everyone here knows that photography has not been something I've been real active in lately, just a hit or miss, very hit or miss. But I have been really concentrated on music. But like all these little artistic, outlets that you have, if you do deny yourself of them, I think it does, or it can really kind of, at least for me, I almost lose my sense of identity a little bit, like, what am I doing here? I do feel a little mentally strange, Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? Music is a gift, man. And if you can play, that is such a gift. Music is magic, right? Mm-hmm. Photography, that's a gift. Photography, that's magic. Mm-hmm. Anything creative, man, if you really put the effort into it, it is a gift and it is magic. It can transform you. It does take you places. And that's what I love about doing anything creative, whether it's drawn with a piece of paper on the coffee table and some pencil, I love creativity, and you know, I know that I do podcasts and videos for photography, but yeah, I'm a guitar player. I love to draw. I love anything that's creative. You know, I get together with my nephew Noah, and we'll create stuff out of nothing.
How old is he now?
Dude, he's 14. He'll be 15 in December.
Oh, look out.
You know what? He'd been living with his mom in Virginia. He just moved back here to Vegas full time. You should see this cat play ball, play basketball. Oh, wow. I started him out maybe about 4 years ago, and I had to take it easy on him. We play half court, you know, and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
He just laid down on the court on the ball. And it was too tired. Now, dude, he has to take it easy on me, man. His ball handling and his shooting. Oh man, I got to start practicing again.
Oh man, I used to play with my younger son Gibson all the time, and you know he I played with him the whole time he was growing up, and you know it was so hard to not just like he would take a shot and for me not to just block and say get that shit out of here. You know, so. But now he's like in my height, I think he might end up passing me up here the next year or so. Like I don't think I can block him anymore, like.
Yeah, so Noah's about a half inch taller than I am now.
Oh, look out. Yeah.
Yeah, I got no chance.
Well, you know, I guess I'm owed a couple beat downs because, you know, I've been beating him down for a good 10 years. So I guess I got to come to me now. But there you go. But
just be graceful, Mike. Just be graceful.
Right. Right. I'll just act like, you know, well, sometimes I got to, you know, I'm trying to build you up, son. I'm trying to, you know, make sure build your confidence, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Good day.
Ted, we have a quite a bit to catch up with you on, and I think some of these questions are going to allow us to do that. But I do want to have a chance for you to make fun of these two hooligans we have here on the line with us. Apparently, they went to Sin City over last weekend, and let's Andre Cooks, take a little brief thing about what you all did there, and then Ted can tell you. Quit being so vanilla tourist and do it this way.
So let me kind of, you know, set the scene a little bit. All right. So,
okay.
Gosh, how long has it been since we've known each, or since we've, you know, physically met in person, like 2 years and change, something like that?
You know what? Well, it was like, it was in October of 2020 when the crazy pandemic was still going.
All right, so we're almost celebrating our 3-year anniversary, so we wanted to do something special. But no, I mean, this tradition that we've had of whenever Mike is in town for work doing his teaching thing, most of the time we've got two back-to-back weekends where we like to meet up and go do something photography related. Oftentimes, and this will make you feel a little bit better, Gutterman, oftentimes that's the only actual like photography that I do is when Kooks is in town. With me moving to North Carolina in, you know, beginning of next year, and what seems like Kooks's frequency of coming out here of being a little bit less gonna be happening a little bit less often, we wanted to kind of go out with a bang, and we've only done one other overnight trip, which was out to Kingman, Arizona, and lots of little places, you know, on the way there and on the way back. But the idea, you know, came up for us to do a little bit longer of a trip. So we did a two night Friday late afternoon, evening, and then when we got back, it was about 5-6 p.m. on Sunday. So it was the longest trip that we did, and we settled on Vegas since it would kind of give us the opportunity to do both some daytime and some cool nighttime photography. Did I miss anything else in terms of the whys of why we picked Vegas, Mike?
No, I don't think so. I do remember we ended up talking about Vegas as a potential quite some time ago, and it was kind of in the back of the mind. And we did have a really good time when we went to Kingman. That was that was a lot of fun. So it was like, yeah, we should definitely go away. And you know, with Kingman, we left on Saturday morning. I picked Andre up on Saturday morning, and then, you know, we drove out and then stopped along the way. And it was funny because we were like, yeah, we can finally like drink together, right? Because we almost never do, because yeah. I've got to drive myself back home, you know. But since we had left at, I don't know what, you know, 5 or 5:30 after, and for me that was after an hour drive of going over to pick him up. We get to the bar out there at the place in Kingman, and we're like, one beer and like, all right, I'll see you in the morning. It was so lame.
We got there and like the bar was already like pretty dead.
Oh, it was dead.
Kind of tended to close pretty early. And it didn't take more than one beer for each of us to start being like, okay, I know we were planning on, you know, having a little fun tonight, but I'm so tired.
And I think it was Halloween too, because they had it all like decorated. Yeah. So that kind of informed our idea that we should like try to gut it out and get where we were going on Friday night, you know, because all things being equal, at least we'd be there. So
yeah, and I'll say that this has all been kind of like a testament to the fact that Mike, as the primary person driving when we're, you know, out doing our photo things, you know, thank you to Porsche for providing the vehicle and the gas and all that. He's always been very careful to, you know, not drink too much the times that we have stopped for something to eat, or we you know, went by our local craft beer tap room one time. Like, Mike had one beer and then lots of water. So this time we were like, we haven't actually gotten drunk together on a trip like this. So that was also part of choosing Vegas.
I think this is a photography podcast, but I'm not sure.
It's coming. Oh, well, it's coming.
Well, because God knows I never talk about drinking on this podcast. I never
social.
No, so we get there to the hotel the first night, and Mike, I have to tell the story, right? So
is this in Vegas? Have we transferred?
We're
in Vegas.
It's night one in Vegas, right? So I leave work a little early. I make it all the way out there and to where Mike's hotel is in Rancho Cucamonga. Transfer all of, you know, my photography shit into Mike's car, and we head out there. I managed to, and I'm very proud of this, I managed to not fall asleep on the drive there once. Correct me if I'm wrong, Goose. I stayed awake.
No, I don't think so.
Some conversations, right? We solved all the world's problems.
No, we didn't. We didn't. We just pointed out all of the problems that don't seem to be fixable. but yeah.
But so, you know, we're doing really well. Great start to the trip. And right when we're there in Vegas itself, trying to find this damn hotel, we're driving around for what feels like 15, 20 minutes. I don't know what happened in that last 15, 20 minutes. My stomach feels like it's going to explode. Oh, I am trying so hard not to shit my pants in the car. And Mike is like going up and down the street, not being able to find the hotel. I'm trying to help navigate, pull up Google Maps on my phone, and I'm like, oh God, I don't know what to do here. We finally find it. The stupid sign has been like blocked by these palm trees to where you can't notice the entrance. Yep. So yeah, it was quite the eventful, you know, beginning to it all.
You could say finding that hotel was a real crapshoot, apparently.
Yep.
So Ted, to give you a little perspective, I've been to the SEMA show many times through work. I haven't been for the last couple of years, So I kind of know the area between like the Strip and the convention center decently well. And so, we looked at hotels like on the Strip, and that is some stupid money. Holy cow. Yeah, they want a lot of money.
Yeah.
So we ended up staying at the Residence Inn right across the street from the convention center. But the reason why was A, you know, I got free nights I had that I could use, and B, more importantly, it's right next to the train. right? Oh. So there were the train stop was right there. But yeah, it was weird because I knew where it was. I'd seen it 1,000 times, but then when we're driving there, I was just got a little turned around, you know? So yeah, I guess that's likely to happen when I'm involved.
Yeah, after, you know, the emergency was diverted, we were both pretty hungry from all that time on the road, and, you know, I've made a little space, so.
Hang on. We drank a good amount of bourbon and some coffee cups before
the hunger
presented itself.
So, yeah, our concern, right, was that knowing that the following we were kind of gauging sort of where our energy levels were, like, were we going to try to do a bunch of, like, the nighttime photography on the Friday night or wake up super early, you know, before dawn on Saturday and do that, or just leave it all to Saturday night. We were both, you know, feeling pretty tired, but, like, up to doing a little bit of walking, and rather than, you know, leave Saturday for the big night to consume copious amounts of alcohol, instead we decided to, you know, pregame our short photo walk and search for dinner. You know, the only cups that were available in the hotel were some coffee cups, and so we polished off, I would say, about 80% of a bottle of Four Roses, which, you know, I'm not saying that to kind of, like, brag or anything. There's many people who have much higher and lower tolerances, but it was a good time kind of picking out from all of our equipment that we brought what we were going to take out to go look for some dinner and see what was open. And yeah, it was fun getting
a little little Kentucky bourbon. I appreciate the support. The help. Well, help
was, you know, we had to you know, pick out something good over there at the legendary Circus Liquor of North Hollywood, my alma mater. where did we end up going, Mike? I can't even remember now.
I don't even want to say it out loud. But at 2 a.m. being half drunk, then the closest thing that we could walk to was a McDonald's, right? So we're walking up to this McDonald's, and then of course it's open, but drive through only. So it's this is not a real dinner anyway, and then now you can't even have it. You know what I mean? It's like, so anyway. So there was a Subway next door that took the overflow of the people on foot, right? So that's where
some Polaroids of the McDonald's, right?
Yep. Well, I brought my tripod. Hell yeah, I was gonna take a Polaroid. It was a long walk for it with dragging that tripod. So it was about a mile. I mean, it wasn't that bad. But
so far, what we've gathered from is you drank some bourbon and you went to a McDonald's. I mean, I don't know if Vegas was necessarily needed for this.
Could have done that anywhere, right? Could have done that anywhere. But
all right. So far, you have not impressed the local Ted Vieira on this.
Nope. Yet.
So, okay. Well, maybe we can come back just a little bit. So the next morning we did have to make a pilgrimage to B&C Camera, though.
There you go.
Yeah, that place was really cool. I think it's an independent place, right? I think B&C is like the guy's initials, isn't it?
What's his name? I don't think so. But it's an independent. It's not that like a chain or anything. They are online now, so you can get your stuff online. But yeah, they're one. I think they've got two locations here in Vegas now. They started off on the west side, and I think they bought out Tom's Cameras or something like that over on the east side. Oh. So I think they have two locations, or they did. I don't know. COVID always changes everything. So
did they sell film there?
Yeah.
Tons.
Buy their film there. You know what? It's a little pricey.
I'll imagine. Yeah.
Yes, it is. But you would be shocked at how much they had, Mike. I mean, and how much new stuff they had. Mm. They had like all the Lomo stuff. They had all the Sinistel stuff. They had tons of Portra, you know, all three Portras in, you know, 35 and 120. They had Flick film. They had like Flick film 620.
Mm. They were better stocked than any film, you know, any place that sells film out here in LA. I was pretty stunned.
Nice.
Yeah, man, it was that was really cool. But of course, on the way there, though, we're driving and we're driving up. I forget the name, right? The one we went to, Ted, was on Sahara, right? So that's okay. I think that was the original place.
Yeah.
And so we came across the strip, and then I don't know what road it was going north, but we passed almost passed an Earl Scheib, and I was like, oh my God, we got to take some pictures of this place, right? But paint your car for $59.95, right? Or whatever that was. So that was Earl. Yeah, man. That you can smell the paint from across the street, you know.
what is this like a discount car painting place?
Well, I guess, you know, I thought it was national. Maybe it is or isn't. But yeah, Earl Scheib was like this really old school body shop. But they'd paint your car in like an afternoon for like $50 in the 80s. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we had a place in Louisville called, I don't know if it was a chain or not, but it was called Mako. And it was like, uh-oh, mm-hmm. better call Mako. Yep. Yep. It was the same thing, yeah.
but they had that. I just remember TV commercials when I was a kid, and they're like $59.95, you know, or maybe they didn't say 50, but it's like $59.95, you know. And then it was like, you know, $69.79, you know, as time passed. But yeah, so we went there to the BC Camera and checked that out, and then we went over by Fremont Street to Fremont Photo Co. And Andre, you should talk about that because you're a little closer to the metal on that one.
Yeah, sure. So I met the guy who runs Fremont Photo Co. when he was out here in LA for the CineStill Photo Walk earlier this summer. For those who weren't aware, for the past several months, we've been doing this kind of CineStill world tour thing, which is a lot less glamorous than it seems. It's pretty much just anybody on our team who, you know, happened to be traveling somewhere in the summer for vacation. We would try to set up a photo walk there, partnering with any like local film labs or camera stores, things like that. So the big one here in LA that drew over 300 people, the folks over at Fremont Photo Co. in Vegas ended up actually heading over. I mean, it's not that far away. So we got to meet them, and they came over to the CineStill office the next day. They were with Gary from, oh gosh, what is the name of the company there?
Wasn't he the Film Never Die?
Was it Film Never Die? I think it might have been. Yeah, Film Never Die in Australia. And he had like brought a processing machine that he had sold to the guys at Fremont Photo Co. And we were kind of helping them do a test, a little demonstration there in our space. So super nice guys. And being out there in Vegas, I wanted to see if they were open. It's a small little space. They're currently doing, you know, processing in the bathroom, which, hey, humble beginnings. That's where I started myself, so can't knock it. They've got a little square, you know, payment processing system, and we're selling mainly CineStill and some of the, you know, repackaged Fujifilm, I believe, from Film Never Die. And yeah, it was just a great little, you know, visit with them. We, you know, supply them with chemistry and film, so it's always a good opportunity to visit some of our accounts, kind of see what it is that we can do to make their purchasing experience a little bit better. We kind of traded some ideas on sort of resources and things that we could provide to help in terms of like troubleshooting and education of customers, because I think with all labs, you know, the percentage of the time that an issue is actually like the lab doing something wrong is so incredibly small. Most of the time it is some little user error thing, and I like focusing on those as opportunities to educate and help people get better results so that they continue wanting to shoot film and feel like it's worth their disposable income. to continue shooting film. So yeah, it was a great little visit. One of the things he has there in the space is this really interesting art exhibit that's called Fallout. I believe his parents worked there in the state of Nevada for some like nuclear testing thing, and so he's kind of gathered a huge quantity of like real artifacts from Fallout shelters and bunkers and things like that. The inside of this little space that he built to look like a Fallout shelter has all this like interesting memorabilia, and like really does transport you back in time. I think he worked with somebody to like record some audio that's very sort of like revisionist history of like, what if the US and the USSR actually did, meet each other in nuclear war. There was even a little dark room are you guys familiar with the Timolite dark room timers?
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. I spotted that as a little film cameo in there. But
nice.
Yeah, just overall a cool space. I think they were about to set up like a women's exhibit of different, artist friends of theirs and customers of the lab to come show their work. So definitely a nice little stop along the way while we were there.
Ted, have you been to this place?
No, I was going to, what's the name of it again?
It's Fremont Photo Co.
I will check that out. Cause you know what? I think stuff like that, like down on Fremont, which is one of the popular areas here, to see a film processing lab pop up down there in such a popular place, to have Pentax putting out a new film camera, to have Leica bring back the M6, and now Polaroid, right? Polaroid put up the new that new model.
Yeah. I2 or whatever, cool,
man. I think these are all cool indications on like, yeah, man, film's not going anywhere.
I love it.
I mean, at least on my end, on like the industry end, from what I can see, it shows no signs of slowing. And things like new cameras, new labs popping up, it only kind of strengthens the confidence I have that this is going to be around here for a while. It of course relies on people like you guys to continue making the active choice to create art with it and to spend your disposable income on this, because none of us are professional photographers, right? Or very few of the people in the community are professional photographers. We all could be spending our money on different things.
Ted's like, hold my beer.
I do pro gigs, but that's the boring stuff like headshots and product photography. I don't post that kind of stuff.
Do you do any of that stuff on film, or is it on digital?
I haven't had anybody that was cool enough, because I like the really black and white moody stuff, right? Yeah. I don't think a lot of businesses are going to want to promote their products in a black and white moody kind of presentation. But maybe I'll find somebody who wants that. I don't know.
I do
have people who like, I've got this one client that I've had for years, man. Very cool cat here. It's Todd Trimble. He owns Trophy Performance down on, where's that? Down kind of out in Post in that area. And these guys are like the rock stars in Porsche, servicing. And it's amazing the vehicles, these multi-$100,000 vehicles they've got down there and the thing. But he's cool enough that, I do all their headshots in black and white.
Oh, cool.
And it looks great.
Cooks, so, do you know these guys?
Yeah. Me, I don't. So they're probably an independent. And
yes, they are. They are.
Yep. The reason I asked that, Ted, in case you weren't familiar, Mike is a senior after sales training manager. Am I getting any of that right?
I'm the only guy that does the body training at my company. So call me senior, whatever you want. It's only me. So.
That was just calling you old.
Oh, that's at least accurate.
Let's get this straight. Kooks works for Porsche. I work for Ford. Now, one of us works for a real auto company, and the other one is it's for the bougie people. I make cars for the working man.
I've got a little Mercedes C230 that I'll take in, and Todd does all the work on it and stuff, and I'll bring in this one issue. And he goes, sorry, man, you're going to have to take that over to Mercedes. He keeps trying to get me to buy a Porsche. I'm like, dude, I'm sorry. I'm not that cat, man.
Good man. Good man. So wait, a C230. So is that a 203?
It's so, baby Porsche. I don't think they make a smaller one. A C-Class, a 230.
Is it a two-door hatchback?
I think they do make a two-door model. Mine's four-door, so I can throw amp and guitar and stuff in the back. And
There you go.
Show up at the gig.
Yeah. Hey, well, I used to work for Mercedes-Benz USA, so I got a soft spot in my heart. And my buddy in Germany who used to work for Daimler, he retired recently, and he always says, yep, as long as the car comes from Stuttgart, everything is okay. Don't hold that against us, Mike. Okay.
So it's all good. We're probably going to be on strike here soon. So, you know, it's a.
Man, I was worried about that because Sunday morning I saw on TV they had a big thing. You know, of course, Bernie Sanders had to show up, but they said they were. It sounded like that. I couldn't hear the audio because it was at breakfast, but you know, they had someone wearing a Ford shirt and holding the strike sign, and I was like, is that Mike?
Yeah, no, they've struck three plants so far, one GM, one Stellantis, and one Ford plant, and they're doing what's called like a stand-up strike, where they're basically just striking pivotal sort of plants. This first round of these three plants that they're striking right now is just kind of, I think, more of like a warning shot. And I think if the negotiations don't go well, then my plant will probably be one of the ones that'll be probably up to go on strike, because we make more profit for Ford than any other plant. So I would have to think that they want to starve us, starve Ford of the trucks that I make pretty soon, if things don't get better. But I don't know. Fingers crossed they come to a good contract, and we'll get this thing over with. But it's weird times, I got to say. Supervisors are not very friendly right now.
Hey, isn't that you?
I'm just a team leader. I'm a union worker. I'm just an elected position on my team, so I don't have any management. But I'm the go-between my team and the managers. So I have to deal with the managers bitching about something and my team bitching about something. So I get it from both ends. So
so you know you're doing a good job if everyone's slightly unhappy.
right. But no, I'm still a union position. So if we go on strike, I'll be out there holding one of the signs and doing all the cheers and all that stuff. So it'd be interesting. Over 24 years there, I've never had a strike. So this might be my first one. So interesting. But it is what it is. I gotta get the middle class back up to where it needs to be. So, you know, that's what we're trying to do. So, but all right. Enough of that union talk, but, believe it or not, this is a photography podcast, and, we have been going almost 40 minutes here. So is there anything you guys want to wrap up with Vegas real quick and then let Ted make fun of you all before we get into the segment?
I mean, just to make fun of ourselves real quick here before we get into the main event, which was our Saturday night out on the strip. After leaving Fremont Photo Co., we both went back to the hotel and took a good long nap. Because that's really the way
this was planning, man. It was planning to be able to stay up late, right?
We were wanting to make sure that we had enough energy to hit the town properly that evening. So we went back and both just kind of collapsed for a few hours, which was absolutely needed.
Mm-hmm. And then I guess you shot the strip, right?
Yeah. So Mike, where do we go? Because my memory is a little fuzzy.
Yep. So we climbed up on, went up on the train, took the train over, and we took it to the MGM Grand, which is not the furthest south on the strip, but it's definitely the southern part. And so we started there and started working our way north. And we spent some time shooting the New York with the Statue of Liberty and Empire State Building, stuff like that. And then we started working our way north. And we made it as far as we didn't quite make it to Treasure Island. I forget which one it was. It was past that Link place, you know, past Bellagio, past the Link. Forget what it was. And
like Mirage or something, or Paris.
Yeah, not that. Well, we were past Paris. Actually, you know what? The cool part about that Paris place is they have that beer park bar. We did stop there because it's like an outdoor bar and it's a little higher than the road. that was, except I guess I'm old and this is going to sound terrible, but man, they had the music so effing loud, so obnoxious. But I mean, I think that's the way that whole strip was in terms of like, especially like the buskers. I guess you can get a really loud speaker for not a lot of money or something, because it was like, it was hard just crossing those bridges across the road, you know, back and forth. And these people playing and you're like, okay, I get you're trying to make some tips, but dear Lord, man, turn it down a little bit. Anyhow, sorry, I should have left that out, because now I'm definitely pegging
if it's, the old if part, it's too loud, you're too old. That's pretty much what they say. Yeah.
There you go. So yeah, we worked our way up, and I don't know, it must have been 1:30, maybe 2 even, and by the time we got back to the train and then headed back, and of course we ended up in a train car with like 6 or 7 people that were absolutely hammered, and you know,
there's your photographer right there.
Yeah, actually, you know, I should have. And I did have, I had my Leica around my neck too, so I could have shot that. But the thing was, I was just really irritated. I had my backpack with my cameras. I had my tripod. We were both pretty
sore, and you know, the patience was wearing thin for the drunk people.
Don't you? And it was, it's like, you know that big dome they built there?
Yeah, I haven't really seen that yet.
Okay, well, me either. That was my first time, but they're like, oh, the dome's coming up, the dome's, you know, and then they're like all fumbling around for their phones and stuff. And it just reminded me of like that movie Bugs, where like the fly is flying at the blue light. No, don't do it. Yeah, the light, you know. but it was, yeah. So anyway, it was a long train ride home, but yeah, we made it, and basically we bailed out Sunday morning, and yeah, it was good. It was a good trip. So probably, like I say, going to the strip might not have been the most ideal thing. You know, we did get some good pictures. I'm sure Andre took some better pictures than I did. I took a few Polaroids I'm pretty happy with. But you know, I still got like some extra CineStill in my cameras I need to shoot. I was thinking I could finish a roll in the Fuji. It's only 8 shots, right? And 12 in the Hasselblad, but I didn't finish either. It was a really good time.
Shot 2 rolls of Kodak Ektachrome through the F100. I don't have that anymore. The N65, the poor man's F100, the Olympus XA, and I got through maybe like 5 or 6 shots in the of Ektachrome in the RB67. So be some slides for us to take a look at next weekend, Mr. Kooks.
It's gonna be cool, man.
All right, Ted. What do these goofballs do wrong?
Man, you know what? I mean, there is a lot of life down on the strip. So, I mean, like, you can capture people. There's a lot of really fascinating people down there. They're tourists. They're partying. They're drinking. For me, when I first moved here, yeah, man, I shot down on the strip all the time. I was always photographing people crossing the street in the rain and all this kind of stuff. It was pretty cool. However, you know, the longer I lived here, it kind of started, and this is just my own bad attitude, is it kind of started to make me feel like going to Disneyland to do street photography. You know, I see all this cool New York stuff and San Francisco stuff, and then I'd see Vegas, and it's just that touristy town kind of thing, you know? Yeah. So I don't go to the strip anymore. You know what, though? It's been so long, I'm thinking about going back, because there is a lot of life down there. And I want to tell stories. I'm thinking about doing a project, and this is kind of a weird topic, but loneliness. I'm thinking about doing a project on loneliness, because I think that, yeah, it's not a positive, uplifting thing, but it's something we can all relate to. You know, everybody's been lonely at some point, whether you're in a relationship or out of a relationship or whatever your situation is. And you know, I like the moody stuff, right? I like that kind of more dark, moody stuff. And so I was thinking, you know, sometimes I would go down to Fremont at 4 in the morning on a Saturday night or Sunday morning. And there'd just be some people out there who just look dazed and confused, you know? I don't know if that's really a good thing to go for. I'm still kind of going back and forth with it in my head and stuff. But down on the strip, yeah, I've shot some really cool people. And it just, like I said, it got that Disneyland effect to me after a while. It's got amazing photographic subjects down there. So it's a good place to hit, man. here's the places that I like to go when I do go down in Vegas. It's like Fremont downtown area. All right. It's kind of like, I feel like that's kind of like the Coney Island of Vegas almost a little bit. And you can find interesting people. They got shows where you can photograph concerts if you want to. But the stuff that I really like is if you go in the back alleys down there, they've got amazing street art. And this might not be, because I know some people think, oh, what are you going to photograph street art? That's somebody else's artwork, you know? Depends on how you photograph it. That's my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. I've always struggled with that. Like when you see some cool street art, you're like, how can I do this and call it my art when it's somebody else's art? And I think you got to. Yeah. You got to. You sort of got to play with light and shadows a little bit to make you feel like you accomplished something out of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My position on photographing street art has always been like, if you just photograph it head on, like completely kind of cropping around the edges of the thing, you've done nothing to kind of transform that. But if you put it within the context of the rest of like the wall where it's at, the fire escapes, all that stuff, then you've done something to kind of paint a picture of what it looks like with its surroundings.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. 100%, man. You created a story. I will usually shoot down the alley to capture the wall at an angle, but then include all the chain link fences and barbed wire and trash and stuff like that. So it puts it in the context. And so that's my take on it, but there's no hard and fast rules. Everybody does what works for them. Mm-hmm. But I do love that area because I kind of like the grittier parts of town. Vegas has got some cool history. I'm still trying to look where I can find the signs of that. There's a lot of old signage and stuff like that that's pretty cool down in that area. I will go down to the Arts District as well because they've got a lot of very cool. Again, I don't do anything on the main streets and stuff. I go to the alleyways because there's some really gritty scenes back there. There's a lot of barbed wire. I like stuff like that where most people just go, huh.
Pretty lights. Look at the pretty lights.
I mean, that's kind of how I feel a little bit about, you know, LA. Like I've gone to Hollywood Boulevard and stuff with friends that have come to visit, and every once in a while, like pretty much only with them, will I actually go out there and shoot. And you do always find something, you know, interesting. But most of the time that I'm shooting, it's not that. It's more in the places that I like to go to, where people are actually from here, not as many tourists. Candids of friends and family, stuff like that. That's what I tend to do more. But it was nice to do something a little bit more cliche, to have the experience of saying, like, you know, I went and photographed on the Strip. Next time I'm out in Vegas, which hopefully, you know, will not be in the too distant future, I will be coming back here to LA for work, you know, hopefully a few times a quarter, and Vegas is really not that far away from LA. I'll definitely take some of those things into consideration, Ted, because I want to see the other side of it, the same way that I get to see the other side of LA.
Yeah, you know, I love photographing at night, and downtown has those alleyways that capture that kind of moodiness that I like. You know what's funny though, man? So I love black and white film, right? I love shooting at night, black and white film. I love shooting in these kind of gritty areas, black and white film. I like the moody thing. I want something to kind of pull, not a huge, fabulous photograph, but something that kind of pulls the viewer in and that kind of hopefully creates almost kind of a movie still atmosphere where they can kind of sense the story there, whatever their story would be. But you know what, man? So I will shoot all this stuff. I'll spend the money on the film. I'll do the developing and the scanning and pulling in and stuff. I'll post those photos, and it gets a fair amount of attention. And we shouldn't be shooting for likes, kids. That's one such public service announcement there.
Definitely.
But then I'll be out like at Floyd Land Park. That is this complete oasis in the middle of the desert where it feels like you're up in the Northwest or something. It's just beautiful lakes and ducks and peacocks and tall grass in the water. And it just, yeah, it feels like you've left Vegas behind. I'll go out there with my iPhone, just taking a walk one night, and I'll snap a picture of a beautiful, you know, the clouds reflecting in the lake, and it's got the red tones from the sunset and stuff like that. And I'll post that thing will blow up. My iPhone photography blows up, man.
Right.
You never know, but that's another story anyway.
I'm guilty of not ever like using my iPhone for what I would consider real photography. I mean, I just use it for snapshots of the family when I'm out or something, but like, I need to get over that, man. These iPhones are pretty good nowadays, you know, like I need to stop thinking it is not a capable camera. Cause it is, but you know, I just, it's just so hard to get past that mental block. Like if it's not on film, it just doesn't count, man. You know, like,
yeah, I'm with you.
But, all right. Well, we are almost, we're 50 minutes into this and we haven't even got to like, you know, the real reason we had, one of the real reasons to have, besides just being a delightful person, is to make Ted our guinea pig on these new questions that we formulated. So let's go ahead and take us a little break. And I just finished my Mr. Pibb, so it's time for beers. And so I got to grab some beers. And we're going to take us a little break and come back with some questions to Ted and probably go on rabbit holes that have nothing to do with the questions we ask. So, there you go. We will take a break and be right back, folks. Folks, we're back from the break, and we've got these questions that we're going to start asking of the guests that we have on here when we have guests. And Kooks actually came up with these. We wanted to call the questions that, you know, was kind of open-ended and would allow good conversation. And I think Kooks did a good job. So applause to Kooks for, you know, getting into his introspective self and really, you know, coming up with some real hot seat questions. So speaking of the hot seat, Ted's seat is getting hot here and it's warming up because he has no idea what these questions are. These are all, you know, right off the cuff. So Kooks, go ahead and hit him with one of these hard hitters.
Okay. Okay, well, the first one, you set me up really nicely, Mike, but I got to say, the first one is comes from a question that a friend of the show, Alessandro Cornacchia, asked of one of our guests in the past, and it was such a good question, I had to add it. So, yeah, so thank you, Alessandro, and, well, Ted, you could tell us if you like this question or not, actually, so how's that? But, what's your favorite part about analog photography?
It's... When I shoot with film, I love the whole thing about it. I love loading the film. I love advancing the film. I love manual focus, manual everything. I don't want a battery. Well, I have batteries in my M6, but I can shoot without them. You can do Sony 16. I want the camera to do less of the work. Boy, the cameras today are amazing, man, but they're like computers. They're computers with a lens. Mm-hmm. I don't want that. I want to be the one who creates the thing. And this is not to put down anybody who uses these cameras because, yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, the creative person is still, that's what, 6 inches behind the lens or whatever they say. You know, so, yeah, if digital is your thing and stuff like that, do that, man. Tear it up. For me... Yeah, the more manual stuff is, I just enjoy the whole process. I love that I can't chimp. Because, yeah, if I shoot digital, you know what I do? I look at the back of the camera, like, could I get it better? Could I do better with this? And that's the other thing is, like, digital photography makes me second-guess myself. If I shoot film, I'm a good photographer, man. I know I got a good shot. It worked. I don't need to see it. If I shoot digital... Yeah, man, I'll second guess myself. Was that the best I could really do? You know? Mm-hmm. So I have more confidence when I shoot film. And the whole thing is just more like therapy when I'm either out on the street or if I'm in a place where I'm shooting with a young lady or something like that. I have much more confidence when I shoot with film.
Very nice. It's funny because most people would probably feel like they're more confident with digital because they can make sure they got the shot, you know?
But, yeah. I'm complete opposite. Yeah.
So, and this is the things that, you know, I have nothing against digital photography and God knows I've probably shot more digital this year than I have film, but I think this is what makes people that are into digital cameras that don't wonder why the hell we're bothering with this film stuff. It makes their head spin, but cause and it sounds so pretentious to say this, but there's a part of me that just feels like, film is just it's a little more artistically creative, you know, like because I feel like we have to fight the medium a little more. And I'm not saying that makes the art better just because it was shot on film, but it just something feels more like, I feel like I'm being more like an more artistic with film. You know what I'm saying? And I know that sounds so pretentious. And like I said, people, digital shooters' heads are spinning right now, but
it draws you more into the process. You're the guy who's doing all the work. You know what I mean? So, you know, when you do stuff like I used to say this with Noah, my little guy, well, he's not little anymore, Mace, hold on, I am. But I would say like, because he would be one of those kids that would say like, how come you're shooting film, man? Ted, you got a digital camera right there, Uncle Ted. Mm-hmm. And I would say, hey, man, you know what I love about film is you have to do all the work. Like if say, because we would draw all the time on the coffee table. Mm-hmm. It just pencils and color crayons and stuff like that. And I go, now you just made a really beautiful photograph there, a beautiful little print there of your artwork and stuff. Would you want to just push a button and have that go blah all out onto the paper? Or do you like the process of shading and sketching and stuff? And he goes, man, I just like to push the button. But that's what I, that's how I try to explain it to people. Like if you're involved in it and you got your fingers in the paint and you're rubbing stuff around, it's just more, you know, you're in it, man. It just gives you more satisfaction, reward for the work that you put in.
Nice.
My two cents.
Yeah. Well, see, man, we're not going to stump him, I don't think. So, came through pretty good there. But
no, that's not the intention. But you know, but it is funny though, Mike, because I'm sure there are some people that would say, oh, well, you know, when I take a digital image and I have my RAW file, you know, I bust my ass in Lightroom and Photoshop and Capture One, and you know, and I create it to something else to, you know, I make something that wasn't there. And there are plenty of people who do some really amazing stuff, right? But there is that side of, well, you know what? With the raw image, I mean, you can duplicate that and go in a whole different direction if you want. You know, you can, and I'm not trying to say one's easier than the other, but like, you know, the light that was in that scene was reflected into your camera and it changed that piece of film forever. And that's what you have to work with. Mm-hmm. You know, and on one hand, that's a limitation of sorts. But on the other hand, I think it's one of the most romantic parts about shooting film, because if I take a picture of my wife or somebody that I love, that piece of film was there 6 or 7 feet away from them. And it was changed forever by the light that hit them and went into the film. So there is like a side of that, too, that is a little more. But anyhow, it's funny. There's a podcast I listen to, and these guys, they end up making equal arguments of both sides, right? You ever have that problem where you think you're trying to make a decision or you're trying to think about something and you think you got it sorted out, but then eventually you end up coming back to being able to, match that a good side with the opposite side, and you're like, well, what am I supposed to do? Both are okay.
All right. Well, what we got next for Ted?
Okay, so the next question, Ted, is what's the most impactful thing you've accomplished with your photography? And when I say impactful, maybe I should say what's the most impactful upon you, or maybe that you felt was impactful, right? I don't mean that like was that a good enough accomplishment or something, you know what I mean? But like what does your mind go to when you think of like the most important or impactful thing that you've done?
You know, I could just start right off with all my iPhone shots of my nephew growing up. I mean, those are very important to me. Some of the most important photos I've ever created. But when we're talking about just being a photographer and being out there with your camera, you know what? And I'm not really shooting this kind of stuff anymore, but that intimate portraiture that I would do with the gals, it's we work together. It wasn't just me. It was something every photograph in any of the collections from those shoots that I did with those gals, we did that together, and I'm very proud of that. And you know, when somebody else contributes, boy, it gives you things that you didn't even know were going to happen, you know. And the connections that we had and the connections that I was able to capture, and I feel so blessed to have had such cool people to shoot with. Like I said, I'm not even really shooting that anymore. And part of the reason is I feel like I've already done it, and I've been so spoiled with the people that I've worked with. I'm not sure if I really need to do any more of that. But that is some of the stuff. Like if you look at my office, man, it's just surrounded with some of my favorite photographs that I've ever captured. And you know what? Yeah, I'm shooting these women, and they're usually either naked or, but they always have a sheet. They've always got something. So there's always some mystery to it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Saul Leiter, some of my favorite, he opened up my eyes when I turned on to him. And I would see the intimate kind of stuff that he would shoot with these gals that kind of look like just friends of his, just hanging out. Man, the room could be a total, you know, mess, look like a hurricane went through it. But these gals would be there looking at newspapers, you know, nude and things like that. But it never seemed gratuitous or anything like that. It was just like a slice of life. Uh-huh. It was a story. It was a scene. And that's what I've always tried to capture when I work with these gals. I'm not trying to exploit just for just the sexiness. And I know it's like some of my old musician friends will look at it and they'll lose their minds, right? But I'm trying to create stories. I'm trying to create, get that vulnerability, get that loneliness, get that stuff where it hopefully does come off more like a still from a movie. And it does tell that story. You know, with like Saul's work, even if the gals are looking at the lens, boy, it doesn't look posed at all. It looked like he just walked into the room and said, "Don't move. You look great." You know what I mean? And that's what I always try to capture. And so when I do see the photographs from those shoots, it just takes me right back there. It takes me back to those moments, that intensity of the shoot and the connection with these people and the creativity that they brought to it.
It's almost like I kind of wonder if like your history of like playing in bands and you know, that collaboration you have when you play with other musicians, if that's if something that you're drawn to with working in a like a team sort of collaborative effort with the portraits, you know?
I think you're right, man. I think that's a carryover from that activity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Awesome. All right, Mike, Andre, you got any comments on that or you want to move on?
No, I think we should move on to the next one.
All right. Great answer, Ted, man. You're nailing it. So, but you know, I think Ted has got the air conditioner blowing on his seat. Can't seem to get it too hot. Yeah, come on, turn it up.
Gotcha moment kind of thing.
But, you know what, though, Ted? Can I say one thing before we go ahead to the next question?
Yeah.
When you were talking about loneliness, one of the things I thought about is, you know, when you see all these people walking around like on the strip, and there's a lot of tourists, but there's a lot of people who are working, trying to make a living somehow. Sure. And I guess the ones that were like the most obvious to me, at least, are those women that would walk around with like the big feathers behind their head and
not showgirl kind of look. Yeah.
And they wanted to take pictures with you for some money. Yeah, I think that was their shtick. And I always wondered if that is empowering, or if it makes them feel good, or if it makes them feel bad, and there's probably no way that you could ask, or that I could imagine asking someone, you know what I mean? Like, how do you on the street? Yeah. But when you were talking about a project about loneliness, I'd take a bet that there's some degree of that in people that end up having to do that to make ends meet, you know, or to make money. Maybe they make a lot of money doing that, but either way, I don't know.
You know, I've known strippers. And, you know, man, that's a wild little life, right? Mm-hmm. And I'll talk to them and I'll ask them questions like that and stuff. I go, you know, and they'll say like, you know what? I'm going to make as much money as I can before I can't anymore. And that's my whole thing. It's a job. It's a gig. I do it and I get out. But on the other hand, I know a lot of ones, man, they got to drink big time to be able to mm-hmm. do these kind of gigs and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And I think, man, they're not seeing the best examples of the male of the species, right?
Uh-huh. So unfortunately,
I can't think that doesn't jade them that much more, because they're seeing these idiots. I mean, most guys are idiots, right? We're idiots. But then you really raise the level when you're going and you're putting dollar bills and 20s and stuff like that where it shouldn't go, you know, and things. Yeah. And I'm not here to judge, man. And that's your thing and you want to go have fun. That's what it's there for. But I think it's got to have a psychological effect on the people who work there.
Yeah, I bet. And, you know, there's plenty of times that, like, you can be in a room full of people, just like even guys like us, and you can feel pretty lonely, you know, even when you're surrounded with people. So, yeah, I can only imagine, you know, in that situation, it could be worse. But anyway, that's just something that crossed my mind when you were talking about loneliness. And we kind of came back to it about with the ladies that you've worked with in the past, you did use the word loneliness in that among the others in that description. So
yeah, like I said, I can find that vulnerability, that if you can get a person that's so comfortable that they can really open up to you, they will let you see that side of them, that side of their loneliness or their vulnerability. That, yeah, if you're just a cheese ball photographer trying to get in there and get those cheesecake shots, it's just not going to be that good, man.
Yeah, it's not even a matter of sniffing it out, is it? It's just a matter of you know, the vibe and what it is, right? I mean, which is the truth. That is, it's the truth reveals itself. Yeah.
Nice. All right. Well, let's we're getting deep into the woods here tonight. I like it. All right. Where we got? What we got next, Cougs?
Okay. So, what was the most difficult thing you've done in photography?
Huh. I'll try to be good.
I'm right there with you, brother.
Technical stuff, man. You can practice that and you get that stuff down. I don't do a lot of incredible lighting setups. I'm not like Joe McNally or something like that, so I can't comment on that end of the deal. I'm not a hugely technical photographer. I know how to shoot with a manual film camera, and I usually only use one light, and sometimes it might be a reading lamp or something like that. You know, it's not even something I bought from B&H or anything. It's just try the hardest thing. And I can't even say that's I'm a people person. So when I am working with somebody, there's never been anybody that we haven't just really clicked. There was one gal that we had clicked so well, beautiful gal. But as soon as the camera went up, boy, deer in the headlights. And it was so surprising because we had so much fun when the camera was down. Mm. I was really surprised. So, but with everybody else, man, I've worked with some great people and we have connected and had, you know, that kind of construction where we could put these amazing shots, to me anyway, that's all subjective, right? But to me, I love the work that we came away with. And I'll look at them, I'll just go, wow, you ladies, I am so lucky to be working with people like this. So I would just say, yeah, to create good photography, to create something that it's not cookie cutter stuff. You're not following trends. Mm-hmm. You're not copying Trent Park. You're not copying anybody. You're doing what's coming from your heart and your soul, your mind, your creativity, your vision, man. If you stay focused on that, I think that's where you're going to create your strong work. And that's, I think, it's so easy to get distracted when you scroll down Instagram or Facebook or wherever you're going to see your photos from your friends and other people out there. You know, I don't shoot pretty photos. Well, when I do, they get a lot of likes, but from my iPhone. But I'm not going for the pretty photo. I want to go for the story. So I'm shooting shots that maybe the shadows are a little too deep here, or the lighting is not perfect, right? And then I'll be on Instagram and I'll see all this perfect photography. And I think, am I doing it wrong? But I'm not. Mm-hmm. I'm following my heart. I'm following my vision that I want to see this stuff. And, you know, again, with shooting film and digital, this is just me because I have seen people do amazing work with digital. So I can only talk about my own, coming from my own, you know, photography. If I take a picture with my digital camera, I'm using the same lenses because I've got an old Leica 2.62, so I'll still use the Summicron lenses. And that glass is magic, right? I mean, I love the Summicron glass. I don't even try Summilux because I don't even want to spend that kind of budget. But I will take a shot with the digital body. Looks great, man. It's got that punchy micro contrast and everything looks great. But you know what? It's almost like a Xerox copy of the scene I just looked at. With film, you've got character built in. You know, I don't edit my photos. You know, I might pull the black slider down a little bit and maybe work with the curve, stuff like that. But I don't want to edit the photos too much because the film look is what I like. And if I edit it too much, it's going to take it away from what I even just like. So the film has that built in, and maybe that's me cheating. I'm using that built in character of the film to get what I want, but that's what I love. I can't remember the question right now. Have I gone way off target?
No. That's all good stuff. One thing kind of struck me out of what you were saying is I feel like this is what I find hardest about photography is just trying to like develop your own style. I'm not really sure if I ever really got to a point where like, you know, where like, oh, that's an original gutterman. That's an OG right there. Mike's found his style. You know, I'm all over the place. And, but so I think that's, you know, you sound like, you know, you have a certain style to your look. You like the gritty, you like a lot of contrast and deep blacks and just the moodiness of it. And, so that to me seems like maybe one of the hardest things you probably had starting out was, to figure out that's what you wanted it to look like, you know? So, yeah.
You're right. You know, when I first started with photography, I wanted to be Chase Jarvis. I wanted to be Trent Parker, Joe McNally. And, you know, I was shooting everything. If you went to my website, I have 15 galleries of content, you know, of different styles and stuff like animals, family, mountains, you know, and all this stuff. So it did. It took a minute to kind of figure out what's the kind of stuff that I look at. And I just go, man, that's the one. Yeah.
Now, one of the things you talked about is that like a lot of times you use just like a, you know, like a desk lamp or whatever. Have you ever bought any or ever used any like actual like, you know, a soft box or an actual light you bought for photography? Or do you always just use things around the scene?
You know, I used to use speed lights, flashes. Mm-hmm. I've got a couple 32 inch octaboxes that continuous lighting. And I used to use those a lot for my portraiture and things like that. But you know what? The best light that I've ever used is either daylight through the window or if it's a dark scene. Man, find that little 8-watt reading light bulb. Just only light what you want. You're not going to light the whole room. The whole room's going to fall off in darkness, right? But your subject is just going to look beautiful and isolated.
Nice. Yeah. I like that because the idea of any sort of flash scares the hell out of me, so I don't want anything to do with that. So.
But also, it just feels so much more like accessible and like encouraging to people. And I hope that, you know, folks listening to this who share, you know, my fear of flash, Mike's fear of flash, to just, you know, use that little reading light that you have on your desk, because you can look at Ted's photography, which is fantastic, and see that, damn, you can do some good work with very simple equipment.
It's the whole I still don't know who somebody actually quoted this now, but it's my favorite quote. Limitations breeds creativity, right? So sounds like you're using that to its fullest extent there. Yeah.
Oh, it gives you the most powerful stuff, man.
Yeah. Well, I would have guessed, Ted, that some of those pictures I saw, you know, between the YouTube channel and on your Instagram was probably from window light. You know, some of that stuff with the sheet. I mean, it looked like it was a huge light source, you know, and it looked natural light is great, but everyone's got a window. It's not hard to find a window and open it up, you know.
You gotta get the window. get the chainsaw out.
Right. Oh, man. All right. So what we got next?
Okay. So next, what is the biggest failure you've experienced in photography and how did you cope with it? Now, I realize that this is kind of a touchy, if you don't want to talk about it, this is okay. Cause asking, so, you know, sometimes it's hard to talk about, you know, mistakes that we've had, you know, but I always believe that we learn more from our mistakes than our successes. Right. And it like makes you better in life and as a photographer. So,
I don't know if my mistake, this one I'm going to share with you, I don't know if it actually made me better. It was just something like, dude, pay attention, brother.
Well, we're all victims of that.
Okay, well, cool. We're amongst friends here. I was shooting with this one woman who was just, she was from back east on the southeast, and she was just going to be in. And another photographer of mine that lives over there recommended that we get together and shoot while she's here. So she was just here for like a couple days. And we touched base, and I talked about stuff that we could shoot. What would she be comfortable with? And I'd like to come to her hotel room. I think she stayed at the Link. And I said, do you have like is there windows in your room? You know, and she goes, yeah, there's floor to ceiling windows. I'm like, oh man, let's use that. Let's come. That way you don't even have to like explore the city to try and find me. I will come to you and we'll use your window light there. We'll do like, you know, we did like the black bra and panties with the white men's shirt kind of look and stuff like that. And it was Tanya. Very cool person, man. You know, it's like some people where you just click with automatically and they just seem like you've known them like 20 years. That's Tanya. Nice. If you ever shoot with this gal, that's the way it's going to go. So I get down there and yeah, there is a floor to ceiling window. I'm sorry. That is my light source, but it's only like about 2 feet wide or you know, 3 feet wide. And it's one corner of the room where nothing cool is. Right. And so, yeah, I'm shooting Rolly Retro 400S, and I love that film. A lot of grain, but it's such a tight grain structure that it's almost kind of like this smooth graininess. It's kind of cool. I'm shooting with that kind of film. I'm with my M6, and I'm just going to shoot a couple rolls. I figure that's all it's going to take. I did take a few digital shots to get things warmed up. I always do that so that the gals can see what we're coming away with and stuff. That kind of inspires them to go even further. Mm-hmm. So I do that, shoot the digital stuff, and then I pull out my M6. I put the Rolly Retro 400S in there, and I think that I'm closing the base plate. I thought that's what I did. So now I shoot the first roll, and I was talking with Tanya afterwards, and we just got caught up in this conversation. And man, then I popped the base plate off and realized, oh, I haven't re-rolled the film back into the canister yet.
Oh, no.
I just slammed the base plate back on as fast as I can, keep on talking with Tanya like nothing's wrong, because I don't want to make her like kind of freaked out a little bit, like, what's going on here? I put the base plate back on and rewind the film back into the canister, and I just put it in my bag going, please, God, let me have something there that we can use, right? Then I put the second roll in, and I put the base plate back on. I'm starting to shoot, and I'm going like, this just doesn't feel right. Then I realize that the base plate is not completely on. It's not completely latched in. I'm like, what the heck are you doing here today, man? What's your deal? Oh, you remember having to use an M6? You know? And I go ahead and I secure the base plate to make sure that all of that film came out great. I didn't lose anything. The film came out great. The shots came out great. Tanya did a great job of just being so comfortable and so relaxed. I went home and I developed both roles just to, man, see what came off on the one where I did open the base plate up on it. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Yeah, man, light leaks for days and this kind of faded white and stuff. But you know what, man? You know, they talk about happy accidents, right? Mm-hmm. That is so, it came off great. Awesome. Tanya, I told, after she went back home, I contacted her. I told her what had happened with the first roll. I said, but you know, I love this photography. I was sending her shots. She loved it too, because, you know, again, I like that grainy, moody stuff with these light leaks. It was so, it's like shooting with a Holga, right? I mean, right. It was creative looking, built in, man. But still, would I do that again just to be cool? I'm not that cool.
I was about to ask, did you ever do that again on purpose?
I did not, sir. I'm always trying to get the best results I can. And I was really happy that I had made that mistake, and I was really excited with the way it came out. But I'm not cool. I'm not that guy who's going to do all this weird stuff to try and, you know, create the master. I'm going to try and shoot film the right way and see.
Well, you pretty much, you know, you already conquered that art, you know, that side of photography. You don't need to do it again, right? You know, so.
Yeah, I've been there, done that.
Right.
But you know, it's funny, Ted. I've got an M3, and I was thinking about it. There's a couple times that I put the base plate on and thought it was actually latched, and it wasn't.
Yeah,
and I didn't really go very much farther than that, but like I, you know, and you have that sort of feeling that's not, something's not quite right, you know. Yep. And it's like I'm trying to, now that I ought to be old enough to listen to that instead of just plowing ahead, right?
And base plates rolling back and forth on the bottom of the camera. That's not right.
Andre, have you ever had this problem? You're like a snob as well. So like, you know.
Nice snob shot there.
I have actually. It was the first roll that I shot in the M6 that I had just drunkenly purchased while on my internship in New Orleans, and I'm shooting for maybe 2-3 hours all over the French Quarter, getting some amazing shots, and you know, is a different setup than what I'm used to with my Nikon FE, which I also had at the time, and like I finish the roll and then I pop off the base plate without having rewound the film into it, and I don't notice because like I'm watching this like live music there on the street, so I pop off the base plate and I'm just like standing there with the camera in one hand and the base plate in the other for like must have been 5-10 seconds before looking sure. down and going fuck. So nothing was saved. It was light leaked to all hell, and it was just a mess.
Man. All right, well, brothers here. Good.
Man. Yeah.
except Andre didn't get any results, apparently. So. Oh, man. All right, so, Kooks, how many we got left?
So we got two left.
Okay, that's it. That's good.
And so this might be difficult, right? It's not quite asking your favorite film, but could you talk about the best photo that you feel you've taken? You know, like what was it of? What did it mean to you? How did you make it? Something like that.
I would say that, you know, I've gone up to Portland where I used to live and I shot shots up there, and I love all those because of nostalgia, you know, because I love the city so much. But again, I think I have to go back with this shoot with Johnny. And for any of you who've seen my work, you've seen a million shots of her, because I'm still posting archive stuff, things like that. But it's this one where she's laying on the bed and she's got one knee up and she's grabbing the knee, so there's that triangle, you know, there. And her eyes, if you guys do know Johnny, man, this woman has magical eyes that are just, you can't ask for better. She's got the best eyes on the planet. Mm-hmm. But the way she's just contacting with the camera and with the lens and us, and that look, it's probably, if I could only have one photo to go to the desert island with that would keep inspiring me to do more stuff, even though I'm the only person there. It would be that shot of Johnny just laying on her back on the bed, gazing into the camera, the triangle of her knee and the hand going up in the background, just a sheet. That would be the one. And you know what the main thing is? It's the main thing I really love about any of the photos working with these people is the connection. And I might be the only one who really feels it because I was there, where other people might just look at it and go, yeah, beautiful gal, man. But they might not feel that connection because it takes me back. It's that memory. It's that transportation back to that scene where we're shooting together, having fun, laughing, having a great time. What a great memory, man. It's such a great experience. And so I think that shot would be my favorite. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's Acro's film. You know what? I had shot the rest of the shoot with about four or five rolls of Tri-X, which is like my other favorite film for completely different reasons. But then I decided, you know what, man? Because Acros had kind of gone away at that point for a brief period of time, and I still had some left. I go, I'm going to go ahead and shoot this one roll of Acros and see what comes up. Well, man, I scanned all the film, brought it into Lightroom, and I love the Tri-X. The Tri-X shots had this kind of old, you know, 1950s, 60s vibe to it. Mm-hmm. And then the Acros, oh man, right?
Mm-hmm. Acros, this stuff is—it's so good for portraits. There's something about it's something about that, like the skin glows. You know, it's I don't know if it's something to do with the way that it handles red or not.
Yeah,
I think that's it.
Yeah,
it's so good. It's so good.
Like the skin tones just look beautiful. The blacks look beautiful. The whites just pop, but the highlights are just silky, right? Or just so smooth. The blacks are silky. Yep. It's a film that just captured my heart And I didn't even think I would like it. I mean, I loved, you know what got me into it is because of the Fujifilm Acro simulation on their X-Cams. And I loved that simulation so much. I bought a roll of Acros just to go, yeah, I probably won't dig it, but I'll try it, man. I loved it. I fell in love with it from the very first roll, just doing some street photography with it, which you'd think I'd like Tri-X better for. But it was just such a unique look. I'd never seen a film look that good before.
Yeah, it's great.
Have you shot the new Acros? I guess it's technically at least manufactured or coated or something, mostly, I guess, by Ilford, because it's, you know, it's UK now instead of Japan. So, like, have you shot that?
I have, and yeah, to me,
notice the difference or anything, or does it still seem to be the same as the is what you like about it?
I still get that same love for it.
Okay.
Maybe a pickier person might see some differences. There's some subtlety in there. To me, no, I still get that same vibe when I've scanned the negatives and I just go, yeah, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. So glad I used Acros on this.
Nice. Nice. You mentioned one thing that I've said several times in I don't know, 425 podcasts, but it is really weird. Like, I can take like a mundane shot of like a fire escape I took somewhere. And when I look at that photo, I remember so much about that day, like where I ate lunch, what kind of mood I was in. And it's just a mundane shot of a fire escape or something. And it's really weird how you can really remember so much about a day by a single, what might be considered a mundane photo or whatever. And how your memories of going out shooting that day are just really come flooding back to you. It's amazing how a photograph.
Isn't that cool, man?
Yeah, maybe more than anything, like, triggers memories that would definitely not be there if you had not been out shooting that day, you know?
Right.
Yeah, that's why I recommend printing so much.
Yeah.
You can just open up a box of prints and just sit there on the couch with a cup of coffee in the morning and flip through them. And it is. It's like looking through your mom's old photo albums and things like that. Just great memories and great times and great people and stuff. And, you know, I did a couple of videos where I started printing these little books at MagCloud where just, you know, you can print stuff so cheap, but little books, you can make these little books so cheap these days. Mm-hmm. And it's like having a little, so I've got a ton of books that I printed, and it's cool because you can have a stack of them on the coffee table and people can come over and just kind of flip through them and things like that. And you can get those feelings, especially, I mean, you as the photographer, Mike, you can get that feeling where it does like transport you back to that day, the mood you were in, that breeze you felt that day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I love that stuff.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Well, we got one more, right, Cooks?
Yes, sir. And this one's easy, I think. What's your
I'm trying to keep it short. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. I think you'll be able to. What's your favorite part about your favorite camera?
Oh man, it's a work of art. First of all,
I'm guessing your favorite camera is your Leica.
Yeah, my M6. It is. I mean, it's back when, and that's what I loved about Fujifilm when they came out, because they kind of knew that cameras used to look so cool back in the film days. It was such an interesting look to, whether it's Nikon, whether it's Canon, whether it's, you know, Olympus, these cameras looked cool just on their own. That's one of my favorite things. I love the legacy that Leica has. I've always been drawn to that. I've seen their promo films that show like the guys being blown up and stuff like that in the wars, and Leica's there and everything. I love the legacy, brother. I'm that guy. This film just pulled me in, man. I'm crying at the end. Mm-hmm. And I love the way it feels. It's like winding, and I don't have a Swiss watch, so I'm just kind of guessing. When I advance the film, it's like winding a Swiss watch.
Uh-oh, Andre's stepping in, I'm sure, on this one. So.
It does feel good. Oh, haptic feedback.
It puts me in a good mood just to walk around the house with an empty film, Leica. Just, you know, advancing, focusing on shots, taking stuff. If I'm just killing time, that's a mood booster, man. And I love that. I love the way the lenses feel and the manual focus. I love the range finder focusing. Now, you either love that or you hate that, and I understand both takes on that, because if you like DSLR and you like seeing things come into focus, you know, how cool is that? That's kind of magic in itself. Mm-hmm. But for me, it just, I can do much better with a DS or an SLR. I'm always kind of second guessing the focusing a little bit more with rangefinders. It's a lot easier for me to pull things into focus. Oh. I think that's probably enough, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. As my eyes have gotten, as my eyes have gotten more wise, is what I'm not going to say older.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. That's a ticket. It's wise.
Yeah, yeah. As my eyes have gathered wisdom, I do find, manual SLRs. I do like second guess myself a whole lot more, and I'm not a rangefinder guy as of yet, but I probably should become one at some point in my life, because these eyes are getting wiser.
Me too, man. Yeah.
So, yeah.
But Mike, look, if you're gonna get a rangefinder, though, the best rangefinder patches for focusing are Leicas.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the other I've got three other rangefinders. I've got two Yashicas and one of those Canonet QL17s, and they're wonderful cameras. They're great. I love the rangefinder part of it, but like the patch is, it's nothing like what you see in an M3 and I imagine an M6. Yeah, I'm not trying to be a snob. I'm just saying, like, in terms of practical use, I mean, the finder is really bright and you have a big rectangular area to do your focusing with. Whereas these other cameras I've got like the you know, Spider-Man's camera, the Yashica Electro 35, right? And I've got a Minister D. It's a Yashica. It's like it's this little tiny thing. It's a cool camera, but both of those and the Canonet too, the rangefinder patch is kind of like a blob. It's like soft around the edges, and you know, it's like, it's, and I'm not knocking it. I can focus with it fine and my eyes aren't that great, and you can work with it. But what I'm trying to say is if your eyes are the limitation you're trying to work around, Leica is the answer.
I know it is. Like, if I'm going to spend that money on a Leica, maybe I should just get LASIKs and be done with it. You know?
But the difference, though, Mike, come on, Mike,
same, right?
Like, but LASIK is temporary and the Leica is forever.
Okay.
Come on, dude, you're not ever going to let go of your Leica. I'm never letting go of my M3, man. I'm not. You know what I mean?
Especially that rangefinder.
Exactly. But dude, the problem with LASIK, I think about getting that too, but like it's temporary, right? I mean, they cut your eyeballs up and hopefully it stays the way it is. And, but then in 5 years, it might change. You might be worse than you were.
Oh yeah. So what Leicas are costing now, I might be able to go, I might pay for two rounds of LASIK at this point, but you know, I don't know. I don't think I want to go to the LASIK place that's like the car painting place that you all were mentioning earlier. I don't want to go with the discount one on that. I don't think so.
$59.95, Mike, will fix your eyeballs up just fine, man.
I did have a friend, and this was a long time ago at the beginning of LASIK. He did lose an eye, man.
Oh, shit.
And F that.
Decided glasses were just fine for the second one. So, and you know what? That was decades ago.
Right. Yeah, of course. Got an
optics now, so.
But dude, I just, it's amazing though. I've had two people I know that just got cataract surgery and had new lenses put in their eyeballs. Mm-hmm. And it's just like cutting holes in my eye and pulling things out and sticking things in. That's not something to be messed with, man. There's, right. There's really only a few parts of your body you don't want anybody to like cut. Yeah. And, you know, that's one of them, you know?
Well, one of the things as I've been getting older, you know, you get these floaters, you know, these little black specks that just kind of float around in your eye lens, sure, or whatever. And like, you don't really notice them most of the time in life, but sometimes if you're like reading a book or white screen or a white page, you see these things go across your eye and you're like, this is really annoying. And if you start paying attention to it, it starts driving you crazy. But like, so I'd wondered, like, how did they fix that? And apparently, and I'm just going to have to deal with it, because apparently they stick a needle in your eye and suck out all the juice and then filter it and then, and then like inject it back in there. Like, I'm just going to deal with the floaters, man. Like, you know, like,
dear Lord, what in the world is this? Dark Ages? I mean, what the hell?
I find the glasses and floaters, I'll be fine.
right. Oh, I think God. I'll I think I'll stick to my glasses. But
I like the original equipment idea, but like, you know, like pulling it out and like fussing with it and then jamming it back in there, that just seems really wrong. And what about in the meantime? What happens? Your like eyeball like collapse like a basketball, the air comes out of it or whatever, and then they gotta like pump it back up.
Like you're looking up at the doctor and it kind of looks like you're looking through a funhouse mirror, it's all wavy.
Oh God. Oh, I would hope you'd be asleep. Or like would your vision look like you know, like when you see like a really dry desert where it's all like cracked soil, like
right, yeah.
Would that be what your vision looks like?
I don't know. Valley.
You know, the worst part about these kinds of surgeries is that alcohol doesn't help you, right? No, I mean, because no. It's just, you can't drink it when you do that, because then, you know, I guess it causes other problems. So it's like, hey, you're taking away my last bit of armor, man.
Oh man. All right. Well, thanks, Ted, for the great answers there. And I think this is our first experiment with these questions with a guest, and I think it went well. So we'll see. Ted did not scare us away from trying this in the future. So I think we'll give it another shot. So thanks for being our guinea pig on that, Ted.
Happy to be here.
All right. Well, we're going to take one more break, and then we're going to finish up the show with some questions that Andre Kooks and I come up with while we go take a pee break, I guess. So that's so
from cutting eyeballs to using the bathroom. Here we go.
That's right. That's right.
Everything.
I was going to say something about one eye, but I'm not going to go there. But
oh no. Oh.
Thank you. All right, folks, we will take a break and be right back. Folks, we're back with our final segment with Mr. Ted Vieira, and I hope everybody's enjoyed this this comedy. It's gonna be a long episode, you know, but hey, we haven't had a guest in a while, so you're gonna stick in and stick, you know, it's all worth it. And we're gonna do some questions to Ted that we've formulated over our bathroom breaks here in this last break here. So we're gonna start with Andre, what did you come up when you hit the head?
So question I want to ask you, Ted, is there a moment that you really regret not photographing?
Huh. That's a good question, man. That I regret not. I can't think of anything. I can't think of one. I can't think of any kind of opportunity that I've had. You know, I mean, I wish I had a camera all the time, and I wish I shot all the time. I wish I was one of those guys. And a lot of times I would carry a camera all the time just in case on that evening the aliens did land. I would have something to go with. But, a lot of times I even forget that I got a camera on my shoulder and I just go into the store, buy what I need and get home, you know. I can't think of anything, Andre.
Well, you did kind of mention, I don't know if it was in the show or during breaks, because all this kind of runs together. Yeah. You wished you had shot when you were actually playing music and touring.
You're right.
Right.
So, yeah. That's it. Because when I was playing music for a living, man, I wish I would have been a photographer then, because just behind the scenes opportunities, and I would have walked around the stage shooting people while they did their thing. I would have been that guy, you know, and it would have been so much fun, and I would have had such great memories, and it would have been some cool shots. But because how cool is that backstage? See, that's what you're coming up on, Mike. You're
getting
backstage band stuff. To me, that's some of the most like, what's his name? Jim Marshall.
Oh,
you know, his stuff and everything, that all that energy that he's captured because he was that guy. You're right, Andre. I do miss that. I wish I would have done that. Thank you.
See, you went from I can't think of anything to coming up with an awesome answer.
I got thank you. You straightened me out.
All right. Well, Kooks, what do you got for Ted?
Well, Ted, what I wanted to ask you is maybe a little advice. You know, I have a real hard time with portraits. I think that portraits of people are probably like the most important expression of photography. You know, I mean, what is more important than other people? You know, I mean, to me, it's, and especially people you love or you care about, or it's really, really important. And I really struggle though. Like, I mean, I believe what you said is what a lot of people say about making a connection with the person that you're taking a photograph with, right? And that you're working together. You know, the problem is I always get like nervous and I start worrying and I'm not sure what to ask them, how to move or whatever, or how to make the even with someone I know, you know what I mean? And then I know that my how I'm feeling is like just completely going to them and just screwing everything up. You know what I mean? Just like tightening everything up and like,
sure.
You know what I mean? Like just going 180 degrees from where I would want it to go. Feel like I'm doing it to myself. And obviously, you know, if you ever had a problem like that, it must have been a long time ago, because most of the work that you see, and as you talked about, you're able to make a good connection and the photographs show that. So I guess I'm saying is like, what would be your advice to someone like me who manages to you know, sabotage myself unintentionally, but I do that a lot when it comes to portraits, even with when it's someone like, you know, my wife and my daughter. My wife is pretty, she puts up with me a lot, you know, my daughter less so, but you know, other people too, you know. I guess the daughter and the family, that's the part of learning photography and wanting to take pictures of people that are around you when you're really bad, is it kind of wears them out, you know what I mean? And then impressions last for a long time and you don't know what you're doing. And so when you finally get a little better, they still don't want anything to do with you. But that's a different topic. But yeah. So I don't know, do you have any recommendations for someone, an awkward person like me?
Yeah, man, you're not alone. That's a very common question. That's a very common situation. Most people working with another person, especially when they want to really get a little deeper and get more of that person in the frame, it's not something that everybody can just do naturally. One thing that you can do to help, I always have music playing. I always have music, and I kind of try, and it can make a difference too, because I was, you know, usually I will go with this kind of smooth stuff. I like Seal. I like Sade. I like, you know, stuff nice. That's like this is kind of soulful groove stuff, right? Oh, Luther Vandross. I know I'm going back in time now and stuff. Man. Luther, you put a little Luther on. And, you know, but I would put that stuff on. And then one time I had this one gal, Geneva, and we used to shoot together a lot. And we hadn't shot together for a while. And then she came back over and I had, you know, Luther was on in the background. And boy, it just was not clicking, man. And we were like best friends. We'd laugh together. We'd hang out and play gin rummy or rummy together. And it was just a good relationship. So I'm thinking like, why is this not falling? We've done a million photo shoots, but we haven't shot together in a while. It's not happening. So she goes in the bathroom and she's going to change an outfit and stuff. And I go, what can I do? And then I remember that one time she brought over this CD, like a playlist, a little a combination of
like a mixtape, right?
Mixtape. That's the word I was looking for. And I remember I did load that into iTunes when she brought it over that one time. And I go, oh man, because it had like Soundgarden and, you know, all this other stuff that was much more aggressive, right? And so I went and I switched it up, man. She comes out of the bathroom and she goes, "Ooh, I like this," you know, and it changed everything, man.
Wow.
Like we started getting shots that we used to get. You know, the connection,
nice.
The attitude that she would come across with, the looks that she would give me. And so I put on music. That's one thing that I do. And that helps you. That helps the person that you're shooting with. If they like country music, put that on, man. If they like ska, their old Police best hits, you know, put that on, man. That kind of helps a lot. And talk a lot. Don't think about anything technical. You're a photographer, man. You already know that. You know the technical stuff. You don't even need to think about that. Think 100% about the person and their feelings. Because it's not comfortable, man. I hate to get my photograph taken. I don't like being on the other side of the lens. I'm that cat, man. I'll take everybody's picture all day long, but mine, I don't really dig it. So you got to look at it from their perspective. They're probably, especially if you're shooting gals and stuff like that, like I do, that's not a comfortable situation for an average woman to get in that kind of dress or undress and get in front of a lens and let guys take pictures of you. So I think about their feelings first. I think about, even if it's a guy, when I'm going down and taking pictures of these mechanics and their headshots, these guys aren't guys that want to get their picture taken. They want to get in there. This for their website, so they have to. It's part of their gig. They got to go do it. So, man, I shoot like 3 shots, and they're done, right? But I talk to them like they are the coolest cat in school, man. Yeah. I talk to them like they, man, dude, I love your eyebrows. They're just cool, man. They're alive, right? I love you. You've got this look, man. You've got this cool look. You've got this beard. Oh, man, I wish I could have a beard like that. Yeah. And I'm not BSing them. I'm telling them all stuff that I just really observe. And I let them know cool features about themselves that maybe people haven't told them before. I try that anyway. I'm not saying I'm an expert at it or anything like that, but that's my approach, is to make them feel, if it's a guy, feel cool, man. You're the coolest cat in school. Be that guy. Be that guy that you are, you know? And like I said, I can usually, with those guys, and they'll give me happy smiles because I'm a happy guy. I'm a nice guy. and that'll kind of light them up, and I'll just take 3 shots and like, cool, man, you are done. I'll show them the back of the camera. So those ones I shoot black and white, but yeah, they do want digital. If it's women or guys, think about how uncomfortable the situation is for them and just try to make them feel the best you can. And you're going to get that person that nobody else is going to get.
That's the goal, right? Like, really. And it sounds like you really got that worked out. I mean, you can see it from your pictures, but I appreciate that, Ted. I really do.
Yeah.
Cooks, I have an idea for you.
Oh, no.
One thing that, you know, you can always pull out is, hey, I love your hair.
I don't have any hair.
Oh, man.
Oh, I wish I had hair like yours.
I'll show up to shoot with the baseball cap on to shoot the mechanics, and I go, dude, I wish I had. And I'll take my cap off, and I'll go, man, I same line, Andre. I love your hair, brother, you know.
there's a guy at work there's a guy at work that has these huge dreadlocks, man. They're just huge. And I'm sweet. Like, dude, if you could just give me a little bit of that, I'd be so much better off.
Tape it on, you know?
Nice. When my oldest son became a senior in high school, I guess the summer before his senior year, that's when you traditionally do like, senior portraits taken of your high schooler or whatever, right? And we wanted to hire, I mean, we didn't want to hire somebody. I'm a photographer, right? I can do this. And we got some good shots. We went to a park and took the standard, your son in the park senior portraits, you know? Yeah. And some of them were okay, but he wasn't necessarily down with it, you know, because I've taken photos of him his entire life, and like you were talking about, Cooks, with your daughter, that they just get burnt out on you after a while. But but also, I realized too, looking back at it now and listening to what Ted was just saying, I didn't really put him in his element. I mean, he's not really a guy that just hangs out, leans on a wooden fence in a park somewhere. Like, maybe I should have, like, you know, tried to take photos of him, like, you know, making his music and his somehow on his computer in his bedroom somehow. Yeah, somehow made, try to put him in his element a little bit more. And I did not do that, but I mean, about as gritty as we got was, you know, I had him stand in front of a cement brick wall. You know, that's about as gritty.
Gritty.
Yeah, like what, environmental portraiture, is that what that's called? Like if you get a desk or something like that.
Yeah. I should have tried to maybe put him in his element a little bit more. But the funniest one though was when we found this broken old wooden fence in the park, and we did the, where you put like the one arm on the fence or whatever. And it's the cliche, right? And after a first couple of attempts of this, like, yeah, this is even too cliche for me. Like I'm, and these aren't even my,
It's just you bad. Need like the real strong backlight from the sun and like the whole hair light like glowing like an angel.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? Yeah, man. With like the jacket, maybe a cowboy hat, you know what I mean? Like
it's like going to JCPenney and they had like the fake fall scene, you know, and the farmhouse way in the background or something, you know, like all right, well, I'll wrap up with my question. And I'm gonna get into I'm gonna lay onto the psychiatrist chair here, Ted, because I need you to you know, make me feel better about my situation. But obviously one of my big struggles in the last couple of years is my swing back to music and it has left very little time for photography. But I try not to beat myself up about it too much because I'm still creating. It just hasn't swung more to music, and it's always been kind of my first love, but photography is still something that like nags at me and I want to keep doing, and I want to try to do more of, but it's like, man, it's just so hard. You know, you only to have like a job and a family and you only have so much time for your creative outlets. So I'm just wondering, like, how does you share my interest of photography and creating music? How do you juggle it? Like, how do you figure out like some sort of balance between you know, these two passions that can really take a lot of your time? You know, it's really hard to like give them equal time. It's almost impossible, actually. And so, what's your thoughts on that?
You know, because I remember one of the first shows I was on with you, we kind of had that conversation.
Oh, did I? Know if it was so I was struggling with something. It all the way back then.
No, it was a thing where, because you were saying, does that mean you're spreading yourself too thin? Mm-hmm. Trying to do more than one, you know, main creative path. But you look at guys like Ralph Gibson, he's a guitar player. There's so many musicians that are photographers. And for me personally, one fuels the other. It's like, say I write a new tune, and I'll write tunes that are just 3 minutes long, and it's just a thing where, like I said, I'll take one of those old jazz standards and put it down, then put a halftime groove over it and lay some guitar down. And I love the stuff because I'm having so much fun with it again. Uh-huh. That now I want to do a video. I want to get this music out there. So now I got to go out and shoot some photographs to accompany the video.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. And then come up with a concept and a theme and, you know, that loneliness thing. I'm really kind of looking forward to that. It's a weird theme, I know, but I think it's going to be a strong one. And one kind of, because I'm using the music, and that's just been a recent thing, man, within the last couple months or so, using my own music, because I'm thinking, like, I've got this friend, Bob Winnett. He's a flute player, jazz flute player. He's been all over the world. Very cool cat. And I helped him get a podcast started. And in the background of his podcast, he's got a CD. And so we used the music from his CD. And I thought, this is beautiful, man, because this music back here is promoting, you know, who you are as a player and stuff. And now you're talking about concepts and talking about James Moody and all these cats you know. And then I just thought, like, hey, Ted, knock, knock, you're a guitar player, dude. How come you're not doing the same thing Bob is, you know? So that's what started me. I go, you know what? Bob, man, you've motivated me to start putting my own music out there. And then, like I said, the music fuels the photography, because I want to put out videos on YouTube and in the podcast so that, yeah, I can put my new music out there. And it actually pushes me to come up with concepts to help. And the stuff that I want to put out, I never want to put it out about me. It's not a big Ted Vera commercial. The kind of stuff that I want to do is I want to inspire and motivate the other photographers that do subscribe to my channels and things like that. My whole thing is I don't talk about gear anymore, because I used to do that. And of course those videos would blow up. Right. Mm-hmm. But I don't do that anymore. I want to inspire. I want to motivate people to look inside. Maybe this is something you could do, and maybe, or do a variation on this, or maybe it's inspired something completely different. And that will, because I want people to really harness their creativity. We're all creative. People think that they're not creative. Well, we all are, because we're human beings. That's our nature. And so I want to inspire people to, yeah, man, just really develop your creativity and create those masterpieces that are in you. And I want to do that with my music that supports the photography, and the photography that supports the music. So I'm not going to, you know, maybe once in a while I might pull a stock track or something like that, still that more that has that kind of slide guitar bluesy thing or something like that, because that's not me. I'm more of like the jazz cat. So if the photography, it needs more than like a real subtle jazz theme. It needs something a little harder. I might still go get a stock track or something like that. But I talk a lot, don't I? I'm sorry, man.
I should be taking notes at this point.
In another long-winded answer, I think just let one support the other. Let one motivate you to create the other. And you're going to be doing that. You're going to be doing that with your band coming up. I think that would be a perfect opportunity to blend those two.
I think my big fear about that is you know, we've all seen so much music photography and like one of the cliches, like, you know, people say, oh, well, photograph what you love. Well, I love guitars, man, but you can't take a photo of a guitar that's not a cliche. Like, we've all seen a bazillion photos of guitars.
I do it every day, man.
And it's so hard not to do because, I mean, guitars are, I mean, they're pieces of art in themselves, you know, and and it is kind of difficult to be like, oh, look at that guitar leaning up against that amp, and look at the way the light's hitting it right now. That's pretty fucking cool. I should take a photo of that. But then you're like, yeah, I've seen this shot 7 billion times, you know, like,
To just address that, yeah, you've seen them 1,000 times, but you know what? I've got a lot of my buddies on Facebook are all jazz guitar players and stuff, and they'll be at their gig, and they just take a picture of their guitar on the stand with the amp and the piano in the corner, and it's talking about their music, and here's where I am if you guys want to come and hang out. And I've got some of the guys that are pretty good photographers, and they'll shoot their guitar in a way that, yeah, have I seen that shot before? Probably about 300,000 times. But it still inspires me to want to go pick up my guitar and practice because it looks so cool, man.
Yeah, they do. It always does look cool. So, yeah, I should probably so two things I've learned here is to go ahead and take the cliche shots. Three things I've learned. If you go to Vegas, maybe don't go with Kooks and Andre. And then, not joking.
Legit.
And number three is stop acting like the iPhone is not a serious camera. That's a couple of things that I've come up here. Yeah. So, all right. Well, Ted, this has been awesome, man. And we always love having you on. And you're only, again, two episodes away from getting the vaunted negative positive smoker's robe. And so
will be mine.
Oh, man. If only we had the budget to buy those. That's the problem. So why don't you tell everybody where people can follow you, all the good stuff, in case they're living in the woods and don't know where to check you out. Where can people see all this stuff that you got going on?
My main photography site, my personal photography site, is tavphotography.com. The podcast, hopefully it's not too many cobwebs on there, is photographymatterspodcast.com. I know these URLs are kind of long. You know what? You can just Google my name, Ted Vieira, and my YouTube channel comes up. The podcast comes up. That's probably like the easiest way. I've got an Instagram account that I finally just started posting to again. So just search Ted Vieira, and you'll find my music sites, my photography, my Facebook, whatever, my criminal record, my
all the good stuff. That's awesome. And your YouTube channel, I can't remember, is it under Photography Matters or is it under Ted Vieira? I can't remember which one it was.
Ted Vieira, because I started it back before I'd even know how to do any of this stuff.
Right. Okay. Awesome. Well, Ted, again, thank you so much for coming on, man. It's been a blast.
You guys are so cool. I love this podcast so much because you guys are just having fun. It's like somebody trying to talk over technical or anything like that. It's real stuff, man. I love you guys. You're one of my favorite podcasts ever.
Oh, man, I'm going to go ahead and retire. This is the last episode of Negative Positives. but yeah, it's mostly just we drink too much, Ted. We didn't conceive this. It just
Is that possible? Drinking too much? Is it?
Yeah, for the thing.
All right. Well,
we'll go ahead and get out of here. Andre and Mike's and my socials will be in the closing music, so we don't have to say that here. But Ted, again, thanks again. And everybody, we will talk to you all soon. Hopefully in a week or two, we'll have a couple another episode out. But until then, everybody have a great week or two until we return and talk to you again. Everybody stay positive.
And shoot some cool film photos.
And you know what, Ted? I don't know if we got a proper Yao Man out of you in this episode. So I think we're going to need to get a Yao Man out of you.
Want that now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, man.
There it is.
It's so great.
So great. Well, Mike, I got to call you out, man. Andre did his roll call episode and said, hey, Mike, can you drop a Yeah Man right here?
I know.
And you did it. You let him hang, man.
I totally
let him
hang. You totally left me hanging.
I totally screwed that up, man. And I was listening back to it at work the next day, and I was like, holy shit, how did I forget to put the Yeah Man drop in there? And so, yeah. But it's funny, Ted, when you just said that, it sounds exactly like the drop I have of you saying
it. It does. Like, yeah, it sounds dude, I can hear that in my head, and that matches it perfectly. I'm just telling you.
Yeah, man.
This is Mike Kukovica, otherwise known as Kooks, and you can find me on Instagram at The Drunk Darkroom.
This is Andre Dominguez. You can find me on Instagram at Andre on Film.
And I'm Mike Gutterman. You can see my photography on Instagram at Gutterman Photo. You can email this program at negpositives@gmail.com. You can join our Facebook group, the Negative Positives Film Photo Podcast Facebook group. We also have an Instagram account under the account name Negative Positives. If you submit photos to Instagram, think about using the hashtag Negative Positives. You can support this program on Ko-fi. That is ko-fi.com/negativepositives. And you can get my music on Bandcamp at mikegutterman.bandcamp.com. A Gutter Man Cave Production!
Yeah, man.